This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Middle East peace talks are set to resume next week. The Palestinians ended their boycott of the talks, although they had initially vowed not to go back to the table until the Palestinian deportees in southern Lebanon were allowed to return. Violence in Israel and the occupied territories escalated dramatically after the deportations. In late March, after 13 people, police, soldiers, civilians, and settlers, were killed by Palestinians, the Israeli government closed the occupied territories. Andrew Whitley has been monitoring the situation. He's the director of Middle East Watch, a division of the group Human Rights Watch. He says the peace talks have been undermined by the Palestinians and the Israelis.
Yes, they have. I think that the Israeli side hasn't helped by the deportations at the end of last year. It certainly hasn't helped by the closure of the occupied territories. The closure, which in the last 3 weeks has prevented most Palestinians from earning their livelihood and is facing and makes them face considerable hardship. From the Palestinian side, I think that the rising violence, which is not entirely attributable to the Palestine Liberation Organization or to other organized groups, has certainly made the climate harder. And I think that the overall climate is one, it's somewhat grimmer than it was 18 months ago when the peace talks first began in Madrid.
At the end of March, Israel closed off the occupied territories. You're one of the human rights groups that issued a statement condemning the indefinite closure. What are your reasons for condemning it?
Several grounds. We feel that the way in which the Israeli government had made the Palestinian economy in the West Bank and Gaza dependent on Israel over the previous 26 years meant that if they arbitrarily shut off the territories, then they were going to be throwing out tens of thousands of people from their livelihood and depriving the area of its principal source of the economy. In addition, we think that the consequence of the closure of Jerusalem hasn't been fully understood either in this country or else even in Israel, where people are simply not aware of the fact that the only modern roads run through Jerusalem, and that as a result of closing off the territories, what you in fact do is you divide the occupied region into four separate self-contained areas which can't contact each other. That's the northern part of the West Bank, the southern part, East Jerusalem, mainly Arab East Jerusalem, and the Gaza Strip, each of whom have had interconnections in the past, and East Jerusalem in particular, as the main focus for the Palestinians, as the area where most of their institutions are, medical or legal, or the foreign consulates, if they want to be able to get assistance from there.
Israel is in one of the worst rounds of violence of the recent past. What are some of the things that have fed this new cycle of violence?
There's a sense of insecurity on both sides, so a sense that was very clear when I was in Israel in January, immediately after the deportations took place, so that the deportations and the violence that preceded it, the attacks by Palestinians on defenseless Israelis, mostly people who had no connection with the government or the security services, that these made Jews, on the one hand, feel very vulnerable in their own land, that they were liable to be attacked simply for being Jews. Palestinians, for their side, touched on their deepest fears of vulnerability at the hands of the occupying authorities who could deport them at a moment's notice. So that act of deportation in late December went really to the quick of both communities' deepest psychological fears. And I think the reaction of the Israeli forces since then, using much tougher means to be able to get at the real culprits in the sense of armed men, has fed that further violence. It's largely unknown abroad that the Israeli security forces are using rocket-propelled grenades and other forms of military warfare in order to be able to demolish houses where people are allegedly holed up. There's a great deal of what the military euphemistically called collateral damage. In the Gaza Strip just a few days ago, there were more than 14 houses destroyed in the course of hunting for one little group.
In this cycle of violence, Israel says it has to take precautions against increasing attacks against Israelis. The Palestinians say they have no recourse but to violently protest growing oppression and human rights violations in the occupied territories. What is the role of a human rights group such as your group Middle East Watch in evaluating issues on both sides and evaluating what's happening in this increasing, you know, escalating cycle of violence?
We try and identify who are the parties who are responsible for certain actions. We do not take any position whatsoever on whether Palestinians have a right of resistance as people who are living in occupied territory or not. That is simply not our issue. What we do is we try and see who are the actors. If there is a particular group which has a chain of command and identifiable leadership that claims credit for an action, we will condemn it. We will attempt to systematically document what the pattern of actions is and to try to hold them to account to certain standards. When you're dealing with the occupied territories, the natural legal standard that you hold people up to is the Fourth Geneva Convention. That's recognized throughout the world. The Israelis recognize it de facto in spirit part of the time, but they don't consider themselves bound by it, in that they're virtually alone in the rest of the world, in both the legal community and the international governments. So those are the appropriate standards. They're the ones which we look to see whether Israeli behavior is matching what is required under the Geneva Conventions, and obviously collective punishment, which we referred to a minute ago, is one of them, making sure that the economy of the region is not disastrous, does not allow for the well-being and welfare of people is another issue. Certainly not deporting people, as has been their practice in the past. So when we look at violence, we try to distinguish between who is undertaking the action and for what purpose. If a Palestinian individual or a group were to claim credit for an attack on Israeli soldiers, for example, we would simply not take issue with the matter. But if, however, that Palestinian group were to capture a soldier and to kill him, as took place immediately before the deportations, it happened to be an off-duty policeman, in that case a border policeman, then certainly we condemn it. That's somebody who was hors de combat. He was not able to put up any resistance, and it's a plain, straightforward murder.
My guest is Andrew Whitley, director of Middle East Watch. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Andrew Whitley, director of the human rights group Middle East Watch. There are still 396 Palestinians who are living in that no man's land, the Palestinians who were deported from Israel. What are the conditions of the deported Palestinians now, and what is your group in the middle of trying to do now?
The issue has rather faded from the scene, in part because the deportees have considerably improved their living conditions. The weather has obviously improved. They are not in danger of losing their lives from starvation or from lack of water, from dehydration. That although the Lebanese government officially does not allow supplies to reach them, in practice adequate food supplies have been smuggled to them. We're particularly concerned about the issue of regular and frequent access by the ICRC, the International Committee of the Red Cross, which is the principal body that obviously has the means to be able to determine the well-being of these people, who are still considered under international law as protected persons. We continue to take the view that any partial solutions are inappropriate, that the deportation was illegal in the first place, and that therefore the Israeli government ought to take everybody back, and then if they have specific charges against them, bring them before a court.
Israel has said that it's hypocritical of Arab countries to criticize Israel for its deportation of the Palestinians. Egypt, for instance, is in the middle of quite a crackdown against militant Islamic groups. Do you think it's hypocritical for Arab countries to criticize Israel?
There are always issues of double standards. The main argument that's been used by the Israelis, which is a fallacious one, is that Kuwait expelled thousands of Palestinians without any murmur from the international community. They're wrong on two counts. First of all, there was an uproar on the part of the international community. Our organization, with its own small voice, was particularly vigorous on this on this issue. And secondly, they're wrong in that the analogy is false, that the Palestinians who were living in Kuwait, many of them for decades, were in fact long-term foreign residents. They were not people expelled from their own homes or from their homeland, which was the case of the 390 or 400 odd as they originally were, who were expelled from the Israeli-occupied territories in late January. On the issue as to whether the other Arab governments themselves are hypocritical because they're also fighting an Islamist threat, that indeed is the case. And there is some sneaking sympathy, of course, for the Egyptians and the fact that they're battling at the moment with some extremely violent small Islamic groups. I think in that particular sense, the Israelis feel that they're winning a propaganda battle by showing that one has to be firm where the region-wide threat of political Islam is at stake. With the Egyptians, though, we feel equally that the Egyptian government is going about it the wrong way, and that a more appropriate method is inclusion rather than exclusion, to bring in the more moderate groups among the Islamists who are not committed to violence.
Well, what a lot of Israelis say is that, well, what can you expect Israel to do? It is under attack from the inside and from the outside. What is it to do about people inside of Israel who would like to destroy the whole state of Israel?
Not necessarily to expel them from their own regions. After all, Israel does not lay claim, or at least most Israelis do not lay claim, to the Israeli-occupied territories of the West Bank and Gaza. What they should do, in fact, is to use what they are already doing, is the full force of the law against such people. They have the means to be able to lock them up for very many years. Certainly, they have an adequate security apparatus that gives them the means to do so.
Middle East Watch has said that in the long run, human rights violations strengthens the popular appeal of extremist groups. How have you seen that work?
We've seen it in Egypt. I think that's a very good example of the way in which the way of the Egyptian security services in interrogating people, the use of torture against them, the shortcuts in the legal process. Just in the last few days, we've seen that a large group of Islamists in Egypt have been put before a military court rather than a civilian court. The same thing had happened in Algeria and in Tunisia. If people see that specific methods are being used against them as a particular group that's attempting to protest, some of them violent, some of them non-violent, but they're being condemned by association, they will feel less and less inclined to be able to go through the normal constitutional processes in the country to be able to seek change through means other than violence. And the Egyptian Islamist groups have been very specific about it. They have said quite clearly that fire will be answered by fire.
I want to ask you about Israel's occupation of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Is Human Rights Watch and Middle East Watch opposed to the occupation in general?
No, we're not. We simply don't enter into that discussion. It's inappropriate for us to do so. We don't take issue on the very political question of occupation. We don't speak about the rights of a country to occupy another or what its legal position is here. This would be entering into the political arena, and I think we'd be undermining our credibility if we were to do so. What we do is to say that we recognize that even though 26 years have lapsed since 1967, that there are certain laws that still apply there. And the principal one is the Fourth Geneva Convention, which covers occupied territory. The Hague Convention of 1907, which the Israelis do recognize, also applies there. So we attempt to hold a region, and that includes East Jerusalem, even though it's been annexed by Israel, up to certain standards of behavior by the Israelis. And I think that is still the best way to go.
Andrew Whitley, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Andrew Whitley is the director of the human rights group Middle East Watch. This is Fresh Air.